These are the first-person singular files. Thank you very much for the suggestions that have come in for future episodes. I will be working with one of those suggestions for the episode after this one. Email me, peter@peterhalpin.co.uk, with your brilliant ideas, and I'll use those to make more episodes of the first-person singular files. This episode is called Can't Put My Finger on It, written and performed by me, Peter Halpin.
Don't you worry yourself, Pearl, my love. I'll wake you just before four. It's nearly 2 o'clock now, so it'll be a couple of hours or so yet. Remember, just buzz if you need me for anything, like you used to. Yes? Yes?
She won't buzz. She never does anymore. But she will undoubtedly say that she had needed me for one thing or another, but didn't like to buzz. I can remind her the buzzer is perfectly safe and she shouldn't be afraid to use it till the end of time, but she won't have it. "I'm not touching that silly thing," she says with a little dismissive laugh and a flippant waft of her hand. She has a way with words. Not a very nice way. She finds fault in anything and everything I do, like I'm useless, despite the fact she's chosen me to be here to help because she's less able. So backwards. Last week she made another slight of sarcasm on my abilities, and when she turned her back, I furiously strangled the air behind her. She nearly caught me, so I quickly pretended I was having an electric shock. I blamed it on the age-old wiring and standing too close to the TV. I know it doesn't really make any sense, but it's like sticking your fingers up at teachers, and when they turn round, having the weird instinct to rub your hand over your whole face. She now thinks the house is a death trap and refuses to touch anything electrical, including the buzzer, in case she, well, buzzes off. She's got a doorbell up there by her bed that sounds down here. It's a pretty standard doorbell, but it buzzes instead of going ding-dong so as not to confuse her with someone being at the front door. Or, as happened initially, she thought she needed to come downstairs, open the front door and ring the doorbell in order to get me to go up to her in her bedroom. Poor thing. She's not 100% on the ball. Not because of old age, oh God no. She's got just as many of her marbles as she ever had. It's just not very many. When I was about 7 or 8, my mum used an analogy to describe Pearl's, shall we say, lacking intellect. At the time, though, I didn't even know what an analogy was, let alone that she'd just said one. The next day, after school, I popped round to Pearl's and gave her my lunch sandwiches so she could complete the picnic she was apparently short on. It was with the best of intentions, but that is when the cracks in friendships started to form. I got confused for being her son again today. I'm sure that's the third or even fourth time that checkout bloke has done that. Pearl finds it sweet and funny. I don't. She'll always do that interlocking arm thing, pulling me so close I feel myself pushing through her flesh like it's made of a carrier bag half filled with water. And she'll say, "I wish she was my boy." And if she's in an especially annoying mood, she'll add, "My toy boy." And of course I don't argue against it. Just another smile. She'd bought a load of pastries. I used to love a Cornish pasty or a nice big sausage roll, but I've completely gone off them lately. So, of course, she stacked her trolley full of the things. To put you in the picture, I am most certainly not her lover, official or secret cheeky toy boy, and nor am I her son. Pearl has been, or at least was, my mum's neighbour since before I was born. She's taken quite a shine to me, even more so since I've been caring for her. I've lost count how many times she's shown me off to her friends, saying, "I'd adopt him if I could," and, "Oh, I'd trust him with my life." I used to play with her daughter, Catherine, when I was growing up. She was the first person I fancied when I was about 10. Catherine, I mean, not Pearl. She was really cool and funny and out there. You know, brave, adventurous and daring. And she had an amazing pair of red corduroy dungarees that I was very jealous of. I called her Kathy once, thinking it would bring us closer to being a cute official couple. I'm not sure what I expected her to call me. You can't really shorten Ian. But she made it very clear she didn't like Kathy and squared up for a fight. In a panic, I falsely claimed, "I know jiu-jitsu." She quickly got me in a headlock and then held me down with her legs wrapped around my waistline like hungry anacondas. That was when I had another first, as I remember. It made it rather difficult to know how to respond, though, when, after a while, she said, "Not so hard now, are you?" Catherine sometimes called me Ian with two eyes. I thought that was pretty clever, because my spelling of Ian is I-A-I-N, and her dad was also Ian, but I-A-N. And he had a glass eye. Pearl's got cataracts now, which is apt for her with those pearly, clouded pupils. I've let her know she needn't put herself through the dangerous, invasive surgery to correct them while I'm here to see for her. Both my eyes work just fine. Well, I wear varifocals nowadays, but you know what I mean. So I guess I'm Ian with four eyes now. So yeah, that's how Pearl and I know each other. I'd looked after Mum for about a year after she survived her stroke. Pearl watched from the not-so-distance of right next door, doing absolutely nothing to help. But she was obviously impressed with what she saw, as she felt, at that time, that I was qualified and capable enough to take care of her. I wasn't exactly keen on the idea at first, of course, especially as she waited all of 2 days after Mum's funeral to ask me. I'm quite sure she would have asked at the crematorium, but she didn't go. I was going to quite bluntly refuse the job, but then I saw the opportunities it presented. I get paid more as a carer than I did cleaning up at the abattoir, and the smells I get on my clothes is different too. Another plus about the caring gig is that I never miss an episode of Cash in the Attic or Emmerdale, so win-win. Pearl still calls it Emmerdale Farm. Some people can't keep up in this fast-paced, ever-changing world. It can be more entertaining watching her than the programme sometimes. She needs to sit really close to have any chance of seeing what's on the screen, but wants to be as far away from the box as possible for fear of being fried by the death trap electrics. So when there's any sort of loud clap sound or flash of light in a programme, she flinches massively. It's like she's being woken up in a car going over a speed bomb too fast. When the big barn explosion happened in Emmerdale last week, I couldn't tell if she was really enjoying it or fearing for her life the way she was bouncing about in her chair. I had to convince her that the fire wasn't actually in the TV set by changing channels. Trust me to flick over to a documentary about the history of the electric chair. She never directly blamed me for the sandwiches short of a picnic faux pas. She knew what my mum had said, obviously because I'd told her, and held it against her thereafter. She felt I was being led astray with unkindness, and that my mother wasn't caring for me properly. There was no going back after that. Whatever my mum said or did in the eyes of Pearl was wrong and needed to be pointed out in an as underhand a way as possible. For someone who has a crucifix on the wall above their bed, Pearl is distinctly lacking in the power of forgiveness. So, about 4 years later, after much hatred being felt over garden fences, my mum tried clearing the bad air and bringing our two families together by suggesting that Catherine and I would be well suited, that we clearly immensely liked each other, and wasn't that lovely? It was true. Catherine and I were inseparable. We spent pretty much every weekend together, all the holiday times. She was always in my mind, my thoughts and plans. We looked out for each other. There were several occasions where bullying was stopped, broken up, and the perpetrators were justly accosted. I've never got to return those particular favours. I've never been so close to someone as I was with Catherine. Whenever she was with me, my soul swelled and sparks flew in my heart. But instead of an opportunity to make all parties happy, Pearl saw this as an opportunity for the perfect revenge. To break my mum's heart and remove her hope. I don't think she ever saw what she was doing to anyone else in the equation. She was so blindsided and blinkered by her tunnel vision vendetta. A year or so on from that, Catherine and I were due to head off to college. We'd already agreed we'd both go to Walsall, Catherine to study fashion design and me to do photography. But Pearl had her own designs on Catherine's future and somehow persuaded her at the last minute to sign up to do some media course in Durham. Pearl said it was obviously a misunderstanding on my part, that I'd clearly got my wires crossed. Well, I suppose that kind of thing can happen, can't it? Fast forward several years, because besides me dropping out of my photography course and failing at life in general away from home, away from Catherine, nothing much really happened to speak of in that time. Until the day I saw Catherine pull up outside in a pretty smart, neat car. And she got out the wrong side. Oh, because some chump of a bloke was driving it. Some bloke, it turns out, is called Greg, like the cheap bakery shop. I've never met him, but I made a joke to Catherine that it was funny his name's the same as that shop, because he is pretty pasty. You know, like pasty and pasty. Yeah, it didn't really work at the time either. Catherine said, "You should see his jumbo sausage roll." Well, I was a bit thrown by that and said something stupid about creamed buns. Catherine's look at me was a killer. They're looking to get a place together at the moment, somewhere round here. So that'll be nice. Nice and awkward. It turns out Greg is an electrician. Got his own flaming company, hasn't he? So guess who Pearl asked me to book in to look over the death trap? Yeah. So I had another guy round yesterday to do a check of things. His report clearly shows there were no problems at all. I'd correctly predicted she wouldn't trust his findings and would insist getting Greg in anyway. So he's coming round tomorrow. I've booked him in at 2:30 while Pearl's having her afternoon nap. He said he'll do it free of charge, as a favour for his mother-in-law-to-be, he said. He's doing me a favour too, as it goes. Not that he knows it. It'll take a couple of tweaks and cuts and things after he's gone. But of course his fingerprints will be all over the house. His van will be parked up outside with his name plastered all over it for people to see. And I'll ask him to leave a note for Pearl to say he's been. All I need to do is ask Pearl to test the button to make sure it still works after Greg has been. And of course she'll want to show off how safe he's made it. And I can be there to see how close those flinches are to the reality. I'm not a psycho. It's just once you've worked in an abattoir for a few years, death and blood and all that loses its horror factor.
Or quite how that doorbell in her room was so loaded with vaults that it's welded itself to Pearl's finger. I have no idea, officer.
Well, she'd not have seen anything clearly with those terrible cataracts. I told her she should get them seen too. The electrician happened to mention Pearl was his future mother-in-law, and he was looking for a house in the area. That wouldn't be a motive for murder. Inheritance of the house? Would it, officer? Oh, my goodness.
Oh, Catherine, I'm so sorry to hear what happened.
Turns out Greg's not much of a baker.
He totally overcooked your mum, fried her to a crisp.
I won't say that to her, obviously. I might take her out for a picnic. I'll offer to wrap my loving arms around her. And she can wrap her legs around my waistline again if she likes.
Can't Put My Finger on It. Written and performed by Peter Halpin.